The House Armed Services Committee may be opening the door just a very tiny crack to another round of base realignment and closure with their proposal for the National Defense Authorization Act. The Military Readiness Subcommittee wants the Pentagon to draw up a 20-year plan that compares its expected force structure to its future infrastructure needs. Roger Zackheim is of counsel at Covington & Burling, former general counsel and deputy staff director for the House Armed Services Committee and former deputy assistant secretary of defense. He is watching how the committee marks up the 2016 defense authorization bill. Roger, it's great to talk to you again. It strikes me that this is a very logical way to approach this, to say, not only please look at what you think you need today, but anticipate, based on the number of planning documents that are already on the landscape, QDR and others, what you will need 5 and 10 and 15 and 20 years from now, so we're not rebuilding at some point in the future something that we have today. Is that your sense of what the intention is of this provision in the NDAA? Thanks for coming on, Roger.
And Francis, thanks for having me back on the show. I think you nailed it. The committee's position has always been that they wanted analysis of force structure and bases to be driven by the demand, the need, really a strategy-driven approach distinct from a budget-driven approach. And I think there was always skepticism and concern from the Armed Services Committee that the Pentagon was seeking a BRAC more to do with the guidance that OMB had given them and constraints on the budget. That's understandable in light of sequestration and the Budget Control Act caps. But the committee wants this to be strategy-driven. And you don't have to look back too far to see how there was a view from the Pentagon that we would require a smaller Army, a smaller Marine Corps, and then 18 to 24 months afterwards, we're looking at a Middle East that they didn't anticipate, which has made even the Obama administration reconsider what's required in terms of force structure. And one of the elements in that report is not only to look at the force structure domestically, but what we'll be doing overseas.
My colleague Jared Serbu writes about the upcoming markup of the NDAA inside the Reporter's Notebook, and that's on federalnewsradio.com/Jared Serbu right now. He writes, if the subcommittee's language survives the full legislative process, Congress's view on BRAC will have softened from no, never, don't even study it to maybe later. Is that something that we should be surprised by? Is this a major development, or is this just one minor aspect of what we may see come out of the NDAA process this year, Roger?
Well, I think the other piece of that same bill is the one that prohibits a BRAC. So I don't think anyone should take away from at least the House Armed Services Committee NDAA, which is in the midst of a markup as we speak, no one should conclude that they are open to a BRAC round. In fact, Ranking Member Smith either already has or will offer an amendment to allow for a BRAC, and I think consistent with the past markups, that will be defeated by the committee. Whether or not this report opens up the door for a future BRAC down the road, perhaps. My own experience with the committee is that they are seeking data from the Pentagon. So when the Pentagon goes back and asks for a BRAC, they could point to this report and make arguments why it doesn't really align with the strategy and the need and the demand coming from the military. That's my own view.
Jared also writes, the Personnel Subcommittee endorsed reforms to the retirement system along the lines the Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization Commission recommended earlier this year. A lot of people that I've talked to around town are struck by how quickly some of those recommendations have been signed on to, have been supported, endorsed by members of Congress, in some cases in both parties, and certainly on both sides of the Hill. Now, full disclosure, your father was on that commission, so you may be a little biased about the success that they've had. But I can't recall a commission or a blue ribbon panel or whatever you want to call them that has produced a product that has gotten this level of support this quickly. Am I remembering incorrectly, or is this something that you've noticed as well?
No, I agree with you. I think most blue ribbon commissions essentially produce their reports and then they spend the rest of their life on the bookshelf collecting dust. That is not the case here. And family affiliation notwithstanding, you had people like General Corelli and Admiral Jim Bastiani on that commission. And let's be frank, there was a tremendous amount of interest from the Congress to address the issue of retirement and benefits. Whether you're a defense hawk or somebody who thought you could, you know, be a budget hawk and get more out, waste out of the military. Everybody felt that this system needed to be reviewed, needed to be addressed, and that commission came out in unanimity, and there was a consensus. And I am quite impressed, and in many respects, you know, surprised that the committee was able to adopt, what was it, someplace like 11 out of 15 of the commission's recommendations in the NDAA, the most notable one of which is the one going forward providing a 401k for those who spend, you know, far less than 20 years in the military.
That one, I think, is the one that's amazed me the most, because it seems to me the 20-year retirement, all or nothing, has been kind of the third rail of military compensation up until now that nobody really wanted to address, and yet it seems like, poof, almost all of the resistance to it's disappeared.
Well, I think there's a recognition, particularly after the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and, you know, the next greatest generation, that they deserve something. And making someone wait 20 years was not the right system. And you kind of overlay that kind of basic fairness concern, you overlay that with the fiscal concerns, and that's why you're seeing Democrats and Republicans coming together. Notably, as far as I'm aware, other than one kind of service organization, all others, military service organizations, support this. And I think that's a credit to the Congress and the Commission for making sure that their recommendations didn't happen behind a closed door without others participating, that this was done in an open and transparent manner.
There are five major provisions that my colleague Jared Serbu writes about that will be looked at as the markup continues in the House Armed Services Committee, the markup of the National Defense Authorization Act. And you can read about all those at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. My guest is Roger Zackheim of Covington and Burling. Tell me about the mechanics here. I mentioned this several times. The markup is happening this week. What happens after that? What's the next step, Roger?
Well, the committee is marking up all day today and the early hours of tomorrow morning. The tradition in the House is to try to get it done in one sitting. They'll entertain, my understanding is, over 300 amendments. Once they report out of committee, that is to say, to adopt whatever amendments they adopt, incorporate that in the bill, vote on the bill as amended, and then they'll send it off to the full House of Representatives for consideration. That will take place next week, usually the middle to the end part of next week, where the full House will vote on the NDAA. They will also offer their amendments, and after that, sometime by the end of next week, the House of Representatives will vote out, usually with a strong bipartisan vote, the NDAA, and then the Senate, sometime in the early to mid part of May, will take up its version of the NDAA, again, starting the process in the Senate Armed Services Committee, and then reporting out to the full Senate for consideration.
How does that timeline compare to what we've seen in the past? I seem to recall we got to the knife's edge, at least on the Senate side last year, where there was some question whether this would be the, I think it's, what, 53 or 54 years in a row we've had an NDAA passed?
Yeah, I think we're at year 54. What happens, this year we are a little bit earlier. Usually the House gets its work done before Memorial Day, and the Senate Armed Services Committee takes us up in June. So there is kind of a push to have this considered earlier. Part of that is driven by leadership because they're ready to take this on. What's happened in the past, though, is that regular order has broken down in the Senate. You'll have the Senate Armed Services Committee pass the bill, but the Senate, for whatever reason, was unable to take up the bill for consideration to the end of the fiscal year, sometimes even into the next fiscal year. So we're talking they wouldn't be able to take it off to November or December of the calendar year. My understanding is that Senator McConnell and Senator McCain both would very much like to get the NDAA on the Senate floor for consideration so that there could be a conference and a bill before the president's desk sometime before the start of the next fiscal year, that is to say, to have the president have the bill before his desk for signature by September 30th.